Welcome to the Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman, brought to you by globalresearch.ca. And I'm delighted to have Marjorie Cohn back on the program again. She's a distinguished law professor at Thomas Jefferson School of Law in San Diego, and she's also president of the National Lawyers Guild. She's been a criminal defense attorney at the trial and appellate levels. She's an author. She writes important articles all the time for professional journals and popular websites like globalresearch.ca. And she has a brand new book out. It's co-authored with Kathleen Gilbert. Kathleen is a recognized expert on military administrative law. The book is called Rules of Disengagement, The Politics and Honor of Military Dissent. And what it does, it explores why U.S. military personnel disobey orders and won't participate in two illegal wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. And it explains that U.S. and international law is on their side. And if you obey the law, it obligates them to disobey. To do otherwise is to disobey the law. Marjorie, welcome to the program.
My pleasure, Stephen.
Oh, it's wonderful having you on. You wrote another winner. Your last book, Cowboy Republic, we talked about that many months back, and that was a terrific book also on the Bush administration and their crimes and so on. And this is another winner. You and Kathleen did a wonderful job.
Thank you so much.
Oh, talk about why you did it, and there's so much in it. Let's cover as much as we can in the time that you have to be on the program.
Well, I'm a veteran of the anti-Vietnam War movement, and so I was very mindful of the central role that the GI movement played in helping to end that war, and the resistance of soldiers and sailors and airmen and Marines to the Iraq and Afghanistan wars could also help to play a critical role in ending those wars as well. And you mentioned the duty to enter under international law, and this is something I've testified about as an expert witness in military hearings, and that is about the illegality of both the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. The UN Charter, and I think we probably talked about this when we talked about my other book, Cowboy Republic.
Oh, we sure did.
Yeah, right. But just basically to review briefly, the UN Charter forbids one country from invading another country unless it's acting in self-defense or with the approval of the Security Council. And neither of those two things happened either before the Iraq War, before we invaded Iraq, or before we invaded Afghanistan. The U.S. government, they knew that Saddam did not have weapons of mass destruction. Cheney continually had to pressure the CIA to say that Saddam did. Ex-weapons inspectors were saying that his military capability had been neutered by the Gulf War, years of punishing sanctions and Clinton's nearly daily bombings of Iraq in the no-fly zone. And they also knew there was no link between Saddam and 9/11. In fact, it turns out now from these torture memos, that's why they tortured Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and Abu Zubaydah, waterboarded them 266 times to have them state that there was a link, which evidently they didn't do. So the Security Council also refused to authorize the U.S. or Britain or anyone else to invade Iraq and change their regime, and regime change is illegal. Can't go in and forcibly change someone's regime.
Marjorie, let me stop you because we're going to break away for a commercial. Let's do that. We'll come back and pick it right up.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome back to the News Hour. On with Marjorie Cohn, talking about her new book, Rules of Disengagement, The Politics and Honor of Military Dissent. Marjorie, you cover it very well in the book, and you certainly are an expert on the law, not I. I can read, and I do the best I can, but you make it very clear that the Constitution has a War Powers Clause, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 11, and the Founding Fathers were so concerned about this most important decision that a country could make that it absolutely did not want to give that power to a single individual, the president or anyone else. So only both houses of Congress may declare war, and the last time we did that was on December 8, 1941. So all the other wars, Korea, Vietnam, the proxy wars, the whole lot of them were all illegal wars. I guess that makes us a rogue state.
Well, you know, let's assume that that Congress did declare war on Iraq or Afghanistan. That would not make it a legal war.
Oh, yeah.
Because
yeah.
The U.N. Charter still binds us. The U.N. Charter is a treaty we've ratified, which is part of U.S. law under the Supremacy Clause of the Constitution. And not only did we violate the U.N. Charter when we went into Iraq, we also violated the U.N. Charter when we went into Afghanistan. We were not acting in self-defense. The government of Afghanistan never attacked us. The Taliban did not attack us. 19 individuals, the 15 of whom came from Saudi Arabia, were the ones who attacked us. And so we did not, and this was certainly a crime against humanity, and they should be punished. They and the people who, of course, they didn't survive, but the people who aided them should be punished. But this is not an excuse to invade a whole country and kill many, many of their people, including now many, many civilians. And moreover, Obama is also now stepped up the drone attacks, the CIA unmanned drone attacks in Pakistan, killing many, many civilians. So this is illegal. Even if Congress had used the War Powers Act and declared war, you still cannot prosecute a war of aggression. That is absolutely prohibited, and these are wars of aggression.
Forgive me, I should have prefaced my remarks by putting an exclamation point on your explanation of the UN Charter, Article 51. Absolutely. Without that, Congress will be illegal if it declares war, obviously.
Right. Getting back to fighting these wars today, and also throughout the book, I'm sure you've noticed that we draw parallels between what happened during the Vietnam War and what's happening today. And during the Vietnam War, the U.S. military used racism to motivate our soldiers. They called the North Vietnamese gooks. And so if you objectify the non-white enemy, it makes it easier to convince soldiers to kill them. And the same thing is happening today where the Iraqis, they're called Hajis or ragheads, the turbans, and this is the Afghans as well. Sexism is also used to motivate sexual harassment and sexual assault, to motivate especially male soldiers to be male and masculine and macho and kill. And the result has been that, and this has been true for many years, that women in the military are very vulnerable to sexual assault and rape. We quote Janice Karpinski, who was Brigadier General and in charge of the prisons in Iraq, including Abu Ghraib. She was demoted to colonel, not because of the torture scandal, which was kept from her, but because of some trumped up charge about stealing lotion from the PX. And she said that at where she was, women were raped in the latrines when they went to the bathroom at night. So many women would refuse to drink any liquids after 3:30 in the afternoon so that they wouldn't have to go to the bathroom at night and get raped. And in the 120-degree weather in Iraq, they became dehydrated. Some of them died. And what's even worse is that the military doctor was ordered to cover up the cause of death. So this is a real scandal, as is the treatment of our men and women who come back with PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. It's at epidemic proportions. A RAND study found 300,000 people who have served in Iraq and Afghanistan have PTSD or major depression. There's an epidemic of suicide. Those who come back and are sick or wounded receive poor medical care. Unfit troops are redeployed because of the pressure to get enough troops. And so that's another scandal.
It really is shocking. The Vietnam War destroyed a generation of youth, and these two wars going on now are doing it again. And you wrote an article recently about Agent Orange. We denied it for years. I mean, we not only poisoned the Vietnamese, we're still poisoning them, but we poisoned our own forces. I remember Admiral Zumwalt's son was affected, and if I remember right, he died from Agent Orange poisoning. But the Admiral still felt that this was a war we should have fought. Well, of course, it was a war we never should have fought. But please continue.
Absolutely. And, you know, you mentioned Agent Orange, and I knew that we had sprayed this chemical on Vietnam, but I had no idea of the extent of it until last month I served as a judge on an international tribunal of conscience for the Vietnamese victims of Agent Orange. And I was just blown away by what I saw. First of all, Agent Orange contained large quantities of dioxin. And the reason they used it as an herbicide to clear away the trees so they could find the Viet Cong. Dioxin is one of the most dangerous chemicals known to man. It's the World Health Organization has classified it as a carcinogen that causes cancer, and the American Academy of Medicine as a teratogen that causes birth defects. And the chemical companies, including Dow and Monsanto, as well as the U.S. government, knew that when you manufacture Agent Orange at high temperatures rapidly, that large quantities of dioxin will result. And they also knew that even low levels of dioxin produced significant deformities in unborn offspring of laboratory animals, because the government had commissioned the Bionetics study in 1963, but they suppressed that study. And it wasn't until the study was leaked that they stopped spraying Agent Orange. And the Vietnamese and U.S. soldiers who were exposed to Agent Orange have suffered cancer, liver damage, all kinds of diseases. But what in some ways may even be is just as bad, if not worse, is that their children and grandchildren are born with horrible birth defects. I mean, I saw people and films and testimony of children born without arms and or legs, without brain cavities. They are like blobs. They can't even move. They make inhuman sounds. I mean, it's just astounding. And this is still happening because there are many hot spots. They call them hot spots around Vietnam, South Vietnam, and especially near U.S. military bases where they wanted to clear the brush, and that shows you how much they valued our own soldiers' lives. It continues to poison the people of Vietnam. Well, the U.S. soldiers who were exposed to Vietnam, Agent Orange in Vietnam, sued the chemical companies and got a settlement, which was not very very sizable, but then Congress passed legislation to compensate them. But when that settlement was approved by Federal Judge Jack Weinstein, he assured the chemical companies that their liability was over. So when the Vietnamese victims sued, he threw their lawsuit out of court. He said, there wasn't proof that Agent Orange was a poison weapon under the Hague Convention. And the Court of Appeals affirmed his decision, his dismissal, and the U.S. Supreme Court refused to hear the case. So the case is basically over in the courts, and now it's up to the legislature. And we're talking to people in Congress about sponsoring legislation to compensate the Vietnamese victims of Agent Orange, but also to do more studies on birth defects and damage to U.S. veterans and Vietnamese Americans who are here in this country. And this is one of the lasting legacies, one of the scandals of the Vietnam War, where more than 3 million Indochinese were killed and 58,000 Americans, and that war still goes on for many of these people who were around then and who were sprayed, or whose children and grandchildren are suffering from these horrible birth defects. This is a scandal.
It really is shocking, Marjorie. And, of course, as you say, we don't really care about our own forces, so why on earth would we care about Vietnamese? It's like something that happened at another time, at another age, on another planet, And young people today really don't know very much about it, except they know there was a war. They have no idea what went on. They have no idea that Agent Orange aside, I don't know that we had it back in the Korean War days, but we did the same kind of destructive violence to North Korea. We literally turned all of North Korea to rubble. And again, 3-4 million Koreans died. And if MacArthur had had his way, he literally wanted to carpet bomb the North Vietnam-Chinese border with atomic bombs back in the early 1950s. And for all the bad stuff that Harry Truman did, thankfully, he didn't go along with that idea. My goodness, the country and a good chunk of China would be irradiated as a result. But these are the kind of things that go on. And most people here in this country, Marjorie, don't have any idea about this stuff.
Well, that's because we don't get this news through our TVs and newspapers. We get the sensational stories. You know, I'm very sad about Michael Jackson's death, as I think that most people are, but that's all the news that we're hearing these days. And, you know, one of the reasons that we need to really take seriously this Agent Orange situation is because the same thing's happening now with depleted uranium. We're poisoning Iraq and Afghanistan, and we did it in Yugoslavia as well, using depleted uranium, which stays in the atmosphere for millions of years and poisons people there.
Absolutely. We have to break again, Marjorie. Of course, we did it in the Gulf War. This is another hidden scandal. It's all denied. And even more than depleted uranium, I'll mention one thing when we come back, but we will be right back.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to the News Hour. On with Marjorie Cohn on her new book, Rules of Disengagement, The Politics and Honor of Military Dissent. Marjorie, you covered in the book how the VA provides very inadequate coverage for these sick troops that come back, mostly men, but of course women now much more maybe than in the past. But you go back to the Gulf War, all forces going over to the Middle East got untested anthrax and botulinum toxoid vaccinations. The combination of that, other toxins, and widespread use of depleted uranium is what's behind so-called Gulf War syndrome that was denied. The same problems are happening now, Iraq, Afghanistan, and very sick young people coming back. And you talked about the birth defects. That's one of the hideous results of these toxins that get into their systems. Now, just imagine the effects on Iraqis that live there all the time. But this is horrible stuff.
It is. It really is. And people don't realize that. I mean, we see some death tolls. We see our death tolls. We don't see the Iraqi death tolls or the Afghan death tolls. Sometimes when a large number of civilians is killed by these unmanned drones in Pakistan, we might get word of that. But we really have no idea of the devastation that our occupations are causing to these people, and that includes these horrible, horrible medical effects that you describe and that we describe in the book.
Oh, it's all covered up. To think that we do this not just to Iraqis, to Afghans, but to our own forces, literally destroying another generation of youths, and the media absolutely refuses to cover it. I don't pay a lot of attention to the corporate media, Marjorie, but I monitor a little bit. I honestly can't remember a single story about any of this. Maybe something has popped up briefly, but I don't recall it. So we trash our own people, and nobody gives a damn. Now, that really is a crime.
Yes, I mean, there have been some articles recently about the increasing number of suicides among our returning veterans, and there are estimates among many people that, I mentioned 58,000 Americans were killed in Vietnam, that more Vietnam veterans have committed suicide than died in that war. That is an astounding statistic, just an astounding statistic, and if people have an opportunity to see the film Sir, No, Sir, which was made by David Zeiger, and it's about it actually features Vietnam veterans telling their stories. It's a very, very powerful film. Sir, no sir. You can get it on the web. That is one of the things that GIs are using today as an organizing tool. There are, during Vietnam, there was a tidal wave of resistance where many soldiers felt betrayed by their government, especially when the My Lai massacre became public, where between 300 and 500 old men, women, and children were killed in cold blood in the small village of My Lai, because we had rules of engagement, that's the title of our book, Rules of Disengagement, is a takeoff on rules of engagement. Rules of engagement govern how we fight. And the rules of engagement then and apparently now as well in many instances were free fire zones, shoot at anything that moves. And when Seymour Hersh from The New Yorker exposed the My Lai massacre, many, many GIs were very, very disillusioned and felt betrayed and began, and a tidal wave of resistance resulted. During the Vietnam movement, large numbers of GIs refused to fight, and according to the statistics of the Department of Defense, more than 500,000 deserted, and the refusal to fight led the military didn't have enough people to fight, and so that forced them to go to an air war around 1970, and the resistance took the GI movement was made up of people who would meet in coffee houses all over this country and in Germany and in Asia. They had underground newspapers, and in fact, today we have three coffee houses now, one in New York, one in Washington, one in Texas, that are similar to the coffee houses during Vietnam. The forms of disengagement that we talk about in the book, basically three forms of disengagement from, number one, of the U.S. military from Iraq and Afghanistan. That's one very important form of disengagement, and we talk about to have ideas about how we can accomplish that. Secondly, we talk about the personal disengagement from illegal and immoral orders. And third, in many instances, the disengagement of many people from the military itself. We talk about families, and Feech have a whole chapter on families and parents, and talk about how parents are the single biggest weapon against the military recruiters who come to schools and lie to kids about signing up. They sign a contract with under the delayed enlistment program saying, if you change your mind, you know, you're in high school, if you change your mind, you don't have to go. And then when they change their mind, the military recruiters lie to them. They tell them that they're breaking the law. Sometimes they even kidnap them. And parents are fighting back. And we feature the stories of many of the families and how families of our soldiers and how they have to deal with the PTSD and the suicides and what happens when their kids come back. You know, hopefully this will be, and also, in addition to the political analysis and the comparisons with Vietnam, we have several parts of the book which actually tell, so the book would appeal to generally people who want to end these wars, but also people inside who want to know what their rights are, what happens if they go AWOL, how do they become conscientious objectors, what are the forms of dissent that they can engage in.
Marjorie, you have to go or can you stay?
I have to go.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. Marjorie is really an extraordinary woman. She's been on the program several times, and I always look forward to having her come back. Her earlier book, Cowboy Republic, it just itemized the ways that the Bush administration trashed the law and did all sorts of illegal things, from the illegal wars of aggression to torture and so on and so forth, right down the line. Marvelous book. I recommend it. I love bringing authors on the program about their books. important books that you never hear about in the mainstream. You'll never see the New York Times talk about them in their book reviews, or if any ever get mentioned, it's very brief, or they'll take an important piece of work and they'll marginalize it or even trash it. Usually they'll just ignore it. So I love doing it on this program, and as I'm able to write about some of the books, we'll have another book discussion tomorrow with Michael Hudson, Economics, his book Super Imperialism, and we'll cover more than that as time allows. Michael will be on for the full hour. Marjorie's book, I have written about it. I will get out my article, my review, at the end of the week, so watch for that when it's posted on Global Research. And I do this as I can. I can't review them all. There are too many and there's only one of me. But this is so important. One thing that is also covered in the book, and I've mentioned in some of my past articles, there's an Army field manual, a field manual 2710. It's very specific in some of its provisions, and they state that it is a crime. It is illegal for anyone from the lowliest private to the highest ranking general to disobey a U.S. or international law. Doing it is a crime, and you are obligated to refuse to commit a crime of that sort. So wonderful resistors like Camilo Mejia, Aaron Wittada, others that have refused on these grounds, in some cases, to be conscientious objectors, which gives you to legitimately be a conscientious objector, to refuse to fight on grounds of conscience. The law states that you have every right to do that. It's amazing of the law, if I remember what Marjorie covered in her book, says that you can't claim to have been a CO before coming in the military. You must – I'm sorry? Let me just finish. Hey, let the caller hang on just a moment. Let me just finish some thought, and I'll take the caller briefly, please. Briefly. There's other ground that I want to cover, but I believe you can only claim to have been a CO after you entered the military. Well, I imagine the reason is that if you were a CO ahead of time, you never should have gone in the first place. But if you refuse to fight on grounds of conscience, then you have every right not to do it. Okay, let's take the caller. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. I was thinking that wouldn't it be great if you could just, like, the night before or day before, throw out a URL to us or a little blurb on who you're having on?
Well, it's very simple. Let me answer your point. It's all on globalresearch.ca. The entire week's schedule is posted on the website.
Oh, well, see, you don't remind us of that.
Well, I mention Global Research all the time. I hope that people who listen to this program also go to Global Research, because the two go together like ham and eggs.
Yeah, well, that's not quite the story. But what I'm trying to say is you should point out the section where I can find that on Global
Research.
Oh,
very simple.
Pardon?
Well, go to the website, globalresearch.ca. It has some featured articles on top that we want to draw readers' attention to most. But all the material is vital. There are two columns below that. To the right are featured articles, and to the left is a column titled News. It's near the top of that column. I think there are one or two items above it if you go there now. But you'll see the week's schedule with each of the guests. And if you open it up, you can read a brief account of what we will discuss with the guests. And that's up every week. It usually goes up on the weekend. Once in a while, it might go up Monday morning, depending on the obligations of Michelle Chosudovsky, the editor. But he always gets it up, and you can always go there. I agree. This is important to see just what we're going to have on the program. You know what I try to do. Regular listeners know it. The commercial break, at the end of the commercial break and the end of the program, creep up on me, and I really want to cram as much as my guest wants to say into the time before I have to just cut it off and end it. So I don't have a lot of time to promote the next day's program. Once in a while I mention it, please bear with me. But you can find it very easily on the website.
One quick thing. I just say you don't promote enough. And one quick thing, a lot of us break into the middle of a program so that when the program is coming back on again after the adverts, just give a very short synopsis, you know, so-and-so from so-and-so, hi, welcome back, you know. And so that if we, those of us who tune in the middle because of whatever will have kind of an idea of what's going on. That's all. It's just
well,
simple...
I do that. I mention my guest name again. In the case of a book, I mention the title. I forget what I say on another topic. I might indicate that we're talking about the economy or whatever. But we get right back into the discussion. I think it's pretty simple to know what we're talking about. You're right. I mean, some people join in the middle of the program, and they haven't heard the beginning of it. But everybody can hear the program archived.
Oh, I understand that. That I'm just trying to, you know, a few small points to make it more perfect.
Oh, your points are very valid. I appreciate them. And the mission of this program is to spread vital information on key topics that, of course, as you know, I mean, people who listen to this program because you never get this stuff when you turn on your TV set.
Yeah, and
your wall-to-wall rubbish.
My real problem is that I really feel that we have the culture so well zombified that even when I go to a place and I point out to these people that who I think should be erudite enough to understand, I ask them about the Baxter flu release, the live flu release that killed ferrets, and between 25 to 35-year-old average white people, there were about 15 of them, and I asked them, and only one said, oh, yeah, I saw it on my PDA. Now, there's the verification. That was the bad news. The horrifying news, the Alfred Hitchcock horrifying news was that nobody cared.
Well, I agree with you completely.
That's what we're dealing with. That's the enemy. That is the real enemy right there. We have
the real enemy is a combination of ignorance. Even intelligent people, I know intelligent people, professionals, people who easily could keep up minimally on these things, and they absolutely know virtually nothing. And the second sin, the worst sin of all, is the sin of indifference.
That's
and I'm
what
afraid I know too many people who literally, they're obsessed with their own daily lives, and very frankly, they don't give a damn about
now,
what's going on in
the
world.
You and I can probably trace it back. We're old enough. I'm 64. I survived the Woodstock Revolution, and it was good. And we were talking about we, but then what happened? They brought along me, Saturday Night Fever. Look at me. I'm so cool. And we've been sunk in this narcissism since, ever since. And this is the key. The narcissism is the key to controlling the population.
Well, I agree on all those points, and that's the reason I do this. I'm almost 75. I do this, and I write all volunteer.
I know. I understand. How do we fight narcissism? That's the key. That's the hard part. See, I realize everyone's in their little comfort zone. We're selling the discomfort zone, and that's our essential problem.
Well, I'll tell you the way to fight it. You get people as best we can to come around to the understanding that the policies of our government are hurting them. People will not respond unless they feel pain. So we've got this terrible economic crisis going on. It is causing
great
harm to tens of millions of people. And until they feel enough pain, I mean enough pain, their jobs are gone, their savings are gone, they literally don't know what the devil they're going to do. And until they feel enough pain and maybe start asking questions, why did my government let this happen to me? And they see it happening to their neighbor and people down the street. That's when they'll get mad. This happened in the 1930s when the level of pain was so great that the Roosevelt administration and enlightened corporate people were scared. The echoes of the Russian Revolution was still audible, and they were scared, so they had to do something. They had to give a little to save a lot.
Yeah, but
and that's
now
why
we
got
Obama
the New Deal.
Now we have Obama who has this phony left cover, and that's really totally disgusting. And
No, absolutely. Obama is a charming guy. He is mesmerizing too many people, but I guarantee you that smooth line has a shelf life, and people soon enough are going to catch on that this guy is just George Bush in new packaging.
Well, actually, I call him Obushma. I think we have to start using the term Obushma on a widespread basis, And when people ask you, you say, well, he's not undoing anything Bush did. That's why his name is a Bushman. We have to give him the proper moniker for what he's doing. Anyway, I think you wanted some heavy stuff to get on, so I'll get off.
Okay, I appreciate your comments. They are all well taken. We are on the same page together. Thank you very much.
Okay, bye.
Oh, I'll pick up on one point. The caller mentioned the bird flu business, the Baxter business. I'll have a program. What Baxter did was they commingled avian flu virus with ordinary human flu virus. Something that experts say. I'm doing an article on this, and I have a guest on July 10th who filed a bioterrorism lawsuit against Baxter, other drug companies, world organizations, WHO, the UN, the CDC here, and top officials in various countries, including right here in the U.S., and experts, scientific experts, who know how the labs operate, that Baxter committed this grievous act, say this is absolutely impossible that something like this could ever happen, because the controls in place in these BLS number 3 safety labs, biosafety level 3 labs, where they deal with very, very toxic substances, and the strictest controls are in place to prevent something as obvious as commingling two things together. By commingling these viruses together, they create a new one against which the human immune system has never encountered, so there's no possible resistance. To each of them individually, the worst thing that can happen to you if you inhale the viruses is you might get very sick for a few days, or maybe even longer than a few days, but it'll pass. Probably everybody listening to this program has got the flu at one time or other. It can knock you out for a couple of 3 days. It's been a long time since I had it, but I remember the last time. It pretty well laid me low for a few days, but it passed and everything was fine. I took no medication whatsoever. Nobody should take the medications that are being advised, like the drug Tamiflu, that has killed people. It has killed people. Nobody should use it. Now, I wrote an article a week, 10 days ago, called Readying Americans for Dangerous Mandatory Vaccinations. These vaccinations are toxic. Every vaccination, we'll talk about this Friday with my guest, Dr. Rima Labo. She read my article. She invited me on her program. She's attending a conference right now out of the country, but I'll have her on Friday. She's an expert. I am not. We'll talk about these dangerous, toxic vaccinations. They are being produced around the clock. Many, many millions of doses. These vaccinations have a shelf life. They are being produced to be used. So the idea is to re-stoke the fear about swine flu, get people scared to death, and get them to go out voluntarily and take it. But there's a possibility that HHS, Health and Human Services, is empowered, along with the Defense Department, to declare a national emergency, and they can mandate that everyone in the country be vaccinated. If you refuse, I guess they could lock you up. They certainly could quarantine you, and the whole thing is a hoax unless they deliberately release into the atmosphere toxic agents that will end up infecting people. But so far as I know, it has not yet been done. There's a lot of claims about people being sick from swine flu and deaths from swine flu. In point of fact, there is not a single forensically proved case of a swine flu death anywhere in the world. So what we're saying is put up a shut up. The WHO, the CDC, they have yet to forensically prove a single death attributable to swine flu. But if you go on their websites, I believe they'll say so many in this country, so many in that country, so many sick with this illness. And but there's no proof that whatever illnesses they're talking about have anything to do with swine flu. The real problem is if we are mandated to take these vaccinations. I was so shocked by this that I had to write something about it. And again, I am no scientific expert, but I can read, just like everybody listening to this program. You can read too. And if you read, you will read some shocking stuff. These vaccines, if you take them, will make you susceptible to a whole menu of very disturbing illnesses and diseases. Some of them are just annoying. Some of them can kill you. Some of them have long names I can't even pronounce. Experts have done the experiments in labs. They've done the research. And they're the ones I quoted in my article. And I quoted from an important book on the topic, written in 2004 by Gary Matsumoto, called Vaccines A. And he's got a lot of these quotes from scientific experts in his book. Get ready. I understand that Baxter's vaccines will be ready sometime next month. I guess the flu season starts in the fall, September or so. They want to be ready. Get ready for the hype machine to go into high gear again, to start scaring people. Another case here, another case there. You heard it on corporate TV. It's cooled down now, but you heard it some weeks back. It's going to come again, absolutely. And they're going to scare people again because the drug companies want to sell these drugs. Well, the Congress, in the supplemental funding, $106 billion for Iraq and Afghanistan, they included in that bill below the radar $7.65 billion to go to HHS, most of which will end up going to the drug companies. So in other words, it's the drug company enrichment bill, and it's our health disempowerment bill. We have to avoid this stuff and dangerous drugs. Oh, the time flies when there's so much of importance to talk about. We'll take another break and come back, and I'll finish up with some final thoughts. There's so much that we want to cover in this program. We'll be right back.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to the News Hour. Just trying to get a comment off to my guest who asked me a question. Let me just click send, and I'll send this to her. It really is terrific having people on like Marjorie Cohn, who is such a distinguished person. She does such incredible work, absolutely incredible. And the same thing with our program yesterday and the rest of the week. Let me emphasize again that you can go to globalresearch.ca under the column titled News. The two main columns on the website. Gee, I hope all listeners go to Global Research. I recommend you go every day because there's such vital information on it. But there are two main columns: on the right, feature articles, and on the left, news. And generally, the weekend before, the next week's program schedule is posted with the guests and the topics to be discussed. So that's pretty standard stuff. So yesterday, Tom Greco, we discussed his ideas of getting out from under the corrupted Federal Reserve System. Today, Marjorie on disengaging from illegal wars. Tomorrow, Michael Hudson, who does such extraordinary writing on the economy and financial issues. He wrote a book in 1972 called Superimperialism. He updated it in 2003. We'll write about that. He also was a Project Censored Award winner for this past year. It hasn't come out yet officially, but it will, and they'll announce it. And he wrote an article that really followed on from his Superimperialism book that we'll talk about it tomorrow. I don't want to get into it now. And he also wrote an article on de-dollarization, a meeting in Russia, where Russia, China, and other countries in two groups, BRIC countries, Brazil, India, Russia, China. Well, at least the latter two, maybe the former two will get in on this too. Very upset with the U.S. policy and the dollar that's losing value, very likely will, more so in the years ahead. They want an alternative. So they're kicking around ideas of de-dollarization. We'll talk a little bit about that. James Petras will be back on Thursday. And we always have wonderful discussions that on key world events that he wants to stress. We had a coup. Obama had his first coup. Imagine that. It was only a matter of time. I mean, he's been trying to pull off a color revolution in Iran. We were successful in other countries before he came around, so he's trying one in Iran. They don't quit. If something fades, they'll come back and try it again. But they pulled off a coup in Honduras, still very much a live issue in play. There certainly is a lot of outrage inside the country, but there's no question that the Obama expressed outrage about the coup. Well, my goodness, he should slap his own wrist. He's the guy in the CIA, of course, that pulled it off. Impossible that the Hondurans could do it themselves. But, of course, the military trained at the School of the Americas. You all know what that is. The School of Assassins is what it's called. So they've got these generals and other top officials that are trained there. Maybe, I guess, all military people. In countries like Honduras, they end up generals end up becoming president because they really do have recollections of places like that. But they actually had a progressive guy as the president. And he wanted to do things to help his people. That makes him a bad guy. So they rousted him in his pajamas on Sunday, and they took him out of the country. He's lucky they didn't kill him. Well, he's resisting, so we might talk a little bit about that. You know what that music means. It means time's up, and we'll be back tomorrow with Michael Hudson on The Economy. I hope you'll tune in every day as often as possible. If you can't listen live, listen through archives. Spread the word. This is the kind of information we need to get out to people. In our own self-defense, you know that. We'll be back tomorrow.